Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937. We'll get to your messages shortly. Well, John, the good thing is right now the Bruins are up in the third period, 3-1.
On a good Avs team, to their credit.
An undefeated Avs team, okay. So that's why I didn't want to hold off from like the three-alarm fire to start the show or dig all into the Bruins as they're playing. But until this game is over, they've lost six in a row. You remember when Jim Montgomery was fired last year and Joe Sacco was put in there? Remember we had Bridget Prue on one time and I said, what's more likely to happen? Joe Sacco to be gone this year or Don Sweeney step away? And she thought she didn't think that it would be either one. I can't, but in essence, there was a feeling like Sacco wasn't going to be gone. And I joked, remember I started calling him Joe Sacco Fisher Lamb?
And he was.
And he was. And you have to think that right now, Sacco, Montgomery, Cassidy, are all giggling in their beers right now at what's happening because I said what was going to happen. Joe Sacco was going to be the guy that was going to take the heavy if the team, because if the team turned around and became something great, then, hey, Neely and Sweeney looked like geniuses. This was the move. Maybe it really was something with those guys. This, that, and a third. But as it got progressively worse and heads sunk and think, when's the last time you heard of a hockey team trading their captain in the middle of the season?
And then he goes and wins a cup, too.
And wins a cup. And then when he comes back, watch this. The team he's traded from doesn't have a captain. Can you make this up?
Like, here's the thing, too, because I think we all came into the season knowing the Bruins were not going to be good.
Right.
But the thought was, hey, can they win low-scoring, grind-it-out type games? And you saw opening night against Washington, 3-1, grind-it-out win, right? Same thing in their win against Buffalo. But in this six-game losing streak, KJ, they scored 5 goals against Vegas and lost in regulation. Then they scored 5 goals against Anaheim, lost in regulation. That's twice in 6 games. They scored 5 goals in regulation and lost. Like, give me a freaking break. Like, that's how bad you're going to be. So I know they're winning today, but 5 goals in regulation and you lose. And I think it goes back to, too, I don't know if you remember, I think it was late March, early April, whenever it was, they had the end of season press conference with Neely, yeah. Sweeney, ownership, right?
Right.
And Cam Neely got really defensive when Kevin Paul DuPont asked him about, like, the drafting. And he's like, well, what picks do you think? And he was a real jerk. And so I went back and looked.
Said your mom, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he doesn't work for the White House. But I went back and looked. And on their team, the last time they won a cup, 2011, okay, right. I know they had Chara, they had Thomas, they had all these great players. They had 7 guys on that team, KJ, age 25 or younger, who were real contributors to them winning a cup. And it's 8 if you count Tuukka Rask as a backup goalie. But 7 guys, I'm talking Bergeron, Krejci, Marchand, McQuaid, all 25 or younger. Look at the Bruins right now. They don't have anybody like that. Like, maybe you could say James Higgins, who they picked in the first round last year. Like, I do think he'll be good. But, like, because to your point, you know, it's Cassidy, it's Montgomery, it's Sacco, it's Sturm. Like, they don't have any good young players. Like, that's their, Because Swayman hasn't been good. Technically, he's a younger player, but he hasn't been good. Like, I like Fraser Mitton, but, I mean, he hasn't really shown that much. It feels like Fabian Lizell's been their top prospect for 5 years in a row and can't break through in the NHL. Like, that's the problem here. And the thing that sucks is there isn't a great path for them to get out of this because they're not going to be, like, bad enough to get the first overall pick. And even those teams, usually they're bad for 3 or 4 or 5 years in a row. But they're not going to be good enough to make a deep playoff run.
Okay, so for those who know, like, through all these different years of the Bruins not winning cups, even though they won in 11, as you mentioned, they were still a competitive. That's the history of the team. The history of the team has been competitive, except for, what, 20 years ago, back-to-back, under 500 seasons?
Yeah, was that was like right around the lockout, right? Like it was right. Like the year, a couple of years before. I don't remember exactly. Yeah.
It's the year before Claude Julien gets here. So, but 3 years in a row, now you're going to pre-Bobby Orr years. Like, they're, like you have to talk to someone who is probably in their 70s who would remember how bad the Bruins were in the early 60s. That's the last, like this team, the way it looks right now, let's just go ahead and this team is probably going to be sub-500 this season. You feel that way?
Yes.
Okay. They might do it again next year. Like, do you... What says rebuild happening now? What says that?
Outside of Hagens? Like, yeah, I mean, and look.
You
I,
say one name, that's not a
right,
rebuild.
Exactly.
That's a
so,
hammer.
Like, I like him, and it seems like, and I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I'm an expert on the NHL draft, but it feels like beyond Hagens, they had a pretty good draft this year. But, I mean, how long does that going to take to make a real impact? Anyway, and like, how many times are they going to give out big unrestricted free agent contracts to guys that aren't going to be good?
Yeah, that's. I think that's the other part. It's like, if you draft okay and spend okay, you can get to better results. If you spend bad and draft so-so, that bad spending is going to outweigh your so-so drafting because you have to wait for these drafted players to catch up. So the worst thing you can have is a new guy on the team waiting for this over-bloated paid guy to fail and then get your shot. Like, you're eating up time. We may be on the precipice of seeing the Bruins being a 3 year in a row sub 500 club that has not happened with this team since the early to mid 60s. Early into the mid 60s.
And you just go back to, like, so they drafted Bergeron in 03. And I think they made the playoffs in 04, but they were kind of aging, and then they traded Joe Thornton. They weren't really good until 2009 when they went to the second round, lost in 7 games to Carolina. So that's 6 years later after drafting Bergeron. And they had to draft Lucic and Marchand. They had to sign Chara, sign Savard, find Tim Thomas as part of that as well. It's like, I mean, look, Pasternak's a top five forward in the NHL. Beyond that, like, what are your actual building blocks? Like, okay, we can say Pasternak, and I can have hope for Hagens. Beyond that, I mean, Swayman has been bad a little over a year into this massive contract.
And how new was his contract?
Exactly. And McAvoy, I mean, he was good in the Four Nations game, but as a Bruin the last couple of years, hasn't given you enough. Like, and you can like Mittelstadt, you can like Fraser Mitton, and I do, but those guys...
Don't like him as a team.
It's just... And, like, Morgan Geeky, like, okay, you can tell me Morgan Geeky is a building block, too, so that gives you, what, 2.5 building blocks right now? Pasternak, Geeky, and Hayes?
And on what line, right? There's no consistency.
It's just like, listen to this list here, KJ, okay? Mm-hmm. The last time the Bruins were actually good, they won a cup in 2011.
Right.
Bergeron, 25 years old. Nathan Horton, 25 years old. Krejci, 24. Lucic, 22. Marchand, 22. McQuaid, 24. Sagan, 19. Rask, 23. They have nothing like that now. Like, not even... They don't even have half of that right now. It's like, and where do they find it?
Extremely bad before then to, you know, to constantly be in all these different drafts.
Right, because I remember they, too, like, part of that, when they got Lucic and Marchand, I think that was also the Phil Kessel year where they had, like, the number one or number two pair or something. It was something like that, yeah.
Right, so
and
going
Sagan
back
was
to
part
what,
of the Kessel trade.
Was it, like, 05, 06, somewhere in there where they were under 500? Somewhere in there.
Because 05 was the lockout, and I think they came back and were under 500. They were really bad that first year, and then they were under 500 the next year.
So there's a five-year window between when they're under 500 and they win a cup.
Yeah, right.
But do you believe that you see a five-year plan with this squad right now?
Doesn't feel that way.
Do you see 3 years?
And even think about 5 years from now. So what's Pastrnak then? In his 30s?
He's Marchand all over again. So you still don't have the ability to be a captain, huh? Yeah.
It's just, again, it just feels like, and again, I know they went all in 2023 and it didn't work out. And I give him credit for going all in. And I'm not going to blame Don Sweeney for them losing Game 7 of the Cup at home in 2019. But it's just, you look around at this roster, and who are the good young players you can really point to?
Well, I'll do this. Let's point to this. 617-779-7937. See where this Bruins score is right now. 13 minutes left in the third period. They're up 3-1, so they're maintaining the lead. But,
yeah, you know, they're winning. Yeah.
Right. So, but then again, you saw what happened in that Panthers game. It's like, wait, I thought we were winning. What happened? You know, so let's go ahead and trend with Jason Warren. Then we'll get into some Celtics next. We'll take your calls as well at 617-779-7937 as well as texts as well. Go ahead, Jason.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Take it away. KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937. We're a minute away from Justin Turpin had a great interview with us earlier. John, your thoughts on Wick about Tatum being good with Tatum being gone as long as he needs to be. Is that the right thing to say? Because I think it's the most probable thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it was the smart thing to say, and I think it's the smart approach to take. Because, look, you know me. I've been saying from the very beginning, I think there's a realistic path for him to come back in late February or early March, and some of it will depend on how the team is. But it all really should depend on his rehab and his health. And even Tatum said that, right? Remember he went on First Take a few weeks back. He went on that media tour. He said, look, this is going to depend on
reminding people that he's still in the governor's office.
Yeah, but he was like,
I'm still here.
This is going to depend on if I'm ready physically and my and that should be the number one most important. Like, I don't care, frankly, if the Celtics have 55 wins on March 1st. If Tatum's not ready, don't bring him back. Now, again, I think there's a path there. I've said that all along. I would love to have him back this year, but I think Wick's approach is the right one. And the last thing you want to do, and you know KJ because you work in media, this is going to happen. If the Celtics start off 0-3, 0-4, the camera's going to look at him on the sidelines and then people are going to say, when is our savior coming back? All that, like, that's the last thing you want. So I think the answer and the way Wick went about it was the smart thing to do.
Enough is enough!
All right, let's bring in our buddy Justin Turpin here. Exceptional writer for WEEI.com and, of course, covers the Celtics and all the teams here throughout Boston, New England. Justin, first, we want to get your thoughts on the rebounding difference of 21-8 in terms of offensive rebounds by the Knicks last night over the Celtics. And is this going to be an elongated problem moving forward?
Yeah, first off, I'm not going to have any comments on my defensive rating in the media game. That was embarrassing. We're going to put that behind us. To answer your question, yeah, the rebounding is going to be an issue all year. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Jason Tatum's their best rebounder, and it's not particularly close. He's obviously out indefinitely. Al Horford and Luke Kornet were second and third in total rebounds last year. They're gone in free agency. On a per-game basis, Kristaps Porzingis averaged the second most behind Jason Tatum. The personnel just doesn't allow for it. So, yeah, rebounding is going to be an issue for this team. And how do they make up for it is the question. Can they force more turnovers? Can they get offensive rebounds? Can they speed up other teams into making mistakes? That's how they're going to have to do it, because this is going to be an issue all year. It's something that we talked about throughout the preseason, and we're seeing it early on now that, yeah, this, the personnel just doesn't allow for it, and this is going to hinder them throughout the year.
Yeah, Terp, it feels like the second apron is the biggest cause of them not being good offensive rebounders. But with the personnel they have, is there anything in your eyes that they could do a little bit differently to help their – like, is there a different line? Because I know they've been mixing and matching all kinds of different lineups. Is there anything – they can do differently to help, or is this just, hey man, they don't have the guys and this is the way it's going to be?
For the defensive rebounding, they simply just don't have the guys.
Okay.
And you know, it stinks to look at it that way, but look at just how small they're playing. You know what I mean? Like the lineups, the size, the personnel, they just simply don't have it. And so that's going to be an issue. But for the offensive rebounding, you can absolutely make up for that, and something they're going to have to do. And you mentioned the mixing and matching lineups. I think they found some things that work in that department. And that's why I was a little bit unsure of why Josh Minot didn't play last night, because I thought he did a great job specifically crashing in game one and getting offensive rebound, keeping possessions alive, and that's what they need. So they're going to continue to mix and match just to find out what they have right now. Like, they don't know. There's eight new faces on this roster. You know, five actually on standard deals, three on two ways. But there's so much new going on that Joe Mazzulla is trying to mix and match and see what they have. So part of that is because of how fast they want to play and because of the pace. They want to keep the intensity and the energy up, and that's why they're doing it. But part of the mixing and matching is also trying to see what they have. So I think they're going to find something that they like in that, because they have to do that. The offensive rebounding is an absolute must because of how bad they're going to be on the defensive glass.
So Justin, it sounds to me that there's something that Mazzulla still wants to hold on that he doesn't have the personnel to do, and then when he attempts to do it, it's looking even worse, right? Because what I saw, especially once you got to the Knicks game, I saw a tale of two philosophies. Suddenly in game two, I see them, okay, they're trying to shoot the threes again like they were, like as if they had last year's roster, and did not have the rebounding there to get the missed shots. Or even on the other side, to have the putbacks in from the paint. Like, are we having a crisis here of what Mazzulla really wants to do and knows that he can't do? And when you have that, it becomes a disaster. I'm looking at a disaster. Am I not?
Yeah, it's definitely a fair question, especially after what we've seen in the first two games here. But I think it's too early to call it a crisis or a disaster just yet, right? This is a team. Like I said, eight new faces on the roster. And more importantly, guys are being asked to do things that they're not typically used to doing. Even Jaylen Brown, right? Like, he talked about it last night. He's still learning how to create for others, how to be that playmaker. That's not something he necessarily had to do. Like, yes, he's done it when Jason Tatum's been out, but what? That was 10 games last year? Like, it's a very small sample size. It's like these guys are not used to being in these elevated roles. Look at Namish Keita as the starting center. Hugo Gonzalez is 19. He's subbing in and playing at MSG for his first NBA minutes. Like, guys are still figuring it out. It was going to be a work in progress regardless. And I think this was evident in the schedule when it came out in August. Like, if you looked at the first seven games of their schedule, it was brutal. It was very, very tough. And it wasn't an easy way for this team to ease into things. And now they're feeling the urgency. But I don't think I would call it a crisis just yet, especially when you look at the three-point shooting. And that's something that people are going to get hung up on. They're, I think, 26 of 87. They're shooting below 30%. But only two guys are shooting above 30% on the team, Hauser and Jaylen Brown. I mean, your best shooters, Derek White, Anthony Simons, and Peyton Pritchard, all made 200 threes last year and shot 36% or better. They're all shooting below 30%. Like, eventually those numbers are going to come to life a little bit. They're going to come back to the average. And once those threes start falling, you'll see a different team. Like, I really don't think they're that far off. I know it's crazy to say after watching what we've seen the last two games, but they've outscored their opponents in five of their eight quarters. It's a matter of, can they do it for 48 minutes? Like, we've seen them put together bits and pieces. It's, can they do it consistently? And I think once the shooting starts coming and once they learn how to play defense for an entire 48 minutes and not allow two 42-point quarters in back-to-back games, I think we'll see a little bit of turnaround.
So you mentioned Hugo Gonzalez, Terp, and I got to say, I was really impressed by his energy last night. And I know he's still kind of working his way, and he's a rookie. He's 19. So I don't want to overrate the guy, and I don't want to put too much there, but what can we expect from him this season realistically? Because some people have said, oh, he could have been a lottery pick if he came out a year early. He's got all these skills. Brad Stevens has raved about him. But again, only a 19-year-old rookie. I mean, what are some realistic expectations for Gonzalez this year?
I think similar to what you saw last night. I think that's what they want him to be. Come in and kind of be a chaos agent, right? Create the havoc on the boards, pick up full court, like force guys into being uncomfortable. Like, I think it says a lot that his first NBA possession, he picks up Jalen Brunson full court. I think that says a lot about where they believe in him, how they feel about his intensity, how they feel about him as a defender, specifically on ball. I mean, his on ball defense has the potential to be elite in this league. And I think we saw bits and pieces of that last night. So he's never going to be a guy that's going to like stuff the stat sheet, I don't think, right? I think he'll do it in rebounds and maybe his assist numbers get up later on. But like, I don't think he's ever going to be one of those guys. He's going to be just a defender. And that's what they need. They need guys to complement this roster. So I'm with you, John. I know we were texting back and forth last night, and you know he needs to play moving forward, not only because it could be viewed as a developmental year and you want to get him minutes. He's frankly one of the better wings on this team and needs to be on the floor.
Talking with Justin Turpin here on KJ and Lyons, WEEI. Good Saturday to you. Thank you so much for hanging out. Let me move the conversation to Peyton Pritchard. Earlier on the show, I mentioned that there's a part of me believes that Peyton Pritchard is really a starter as part of a marketing plan just to make sure that people come and know that people come see the Celtics and Peyton Pritchard. And with Anthony Simons starting his previous 205 games, I looked at the previous five sixth men of the year. Only Tyler Hero is the guy who's turned into a starter full-time. Do you believe that Pritchard, probably his real calling, is a sixth man and not a starter?
No, I think he can be a starter. I mean, the shooting has not been there. I alluded to it earlier. He's 2-14 to start the year, and that predates the regular season. If you look beyond the regular season, the 2-14 for just the two games here, if you look at the preseason, he didn't shoot the ball well at all either. But he's had slow starts before. I mean, the title year, he came off a great preseason and really struggled the first couple weeks of the season. You were like, oh, you know, what's going on here? And he really turned it up. So he's in a little bit of a shooting slump, but I give him credit because he's been able to impact the game in different ways. Like,
but he was coming off the bench all that time before, Justin. That's the thing. Like, it's one thing to be a starter. Then it's another thing to be that person that understands how your energy comes in because you're allowed to read the game and get into it. When you're a star, as soon as it goes up, you may be the reason why they need to get somebody in there. I think it's a total different mindset. Even someone like Naz Reid still is a bench, is still a sixth man guy, even though this guy is a big that easily could be a starter for somebody else. I think Pritchard may be that guy that understands adding a spark versus being the fire. There are two different things.
Right, but I just think people are too hung up on the scoring aspect. I mean, he has six assists last night. They had only 19 as a team. That's almost a quarter of the assists came from him. Like, he had five rebounds as well. I think that was the second most on the team. Like, he's doing other things that necessarily aren't, you know, are being overshadowed because he's not shooting the ball well. But he's actually being a contributor in other ways, and his defense as well has come a long way. So I don't know if I would be jumping the ship just yet. It's totally a fair question, right? Because you mentioned it. Like, Tyler Hero is the only one that's actually developed into a starting point guard, like, or a starter after winning Sixth Man of the Year. Like, you know, it's not an easy jump to make. But I think after two games, I don't want to, like, rush to the assumptions, especially when he's playing well. I think he leads the team in assists. Like I said, he's been one of their better rebounders, and that's what they need. They need rebounders. And, I mean, if it's going to come from Peyton Pritchard, who's one of the smaller guys on the floor at 6'2", then so be it. Like, I think he's been okay just with the exception of the shooting, and that needs to be better. Right? Like, I want to be clear on that. He needs to shoot the ball better because, you know, their shooting's a big reason as to why they're 0-2 right now.
Terp, I think one of the things that ties directly to Peyton Pritchard starting is Anthony Simons' defense, right? It's been such a liability the past few years that you can depend more on Pritchard on both ends of the floor. And I'm curious, kind of in your eyes, where is that line going to be where, like, if Pritchard continues to struggle, that you might see Simons end up in the starting lineup? Is it so, like, does Simons have to improve his defense to a certain level? Is there a certain amount of time Pritchard would have to keep struggling to? Because, again, I know it's only been two games, but I'm just wondering kind of where that line is, because these are both guys that I think want to be starters and have elements of their games they could be starters. Where is that line going to come in?
Yeah, no, I think I have seen, you know, some improvement from Anthony Simons defensively. So I think the line would probably lie more towards Pritchard, right? If he continues to struggle, maybe they do look at this and like, hey, can you benefit from going back to your role just being a microwave scorer off the bench? Is that something that better suits you rather than being the starting point guard and having the pressures that come with that? So I think it would rely more on how Pritchard's playing more so than the Simons defense, which I honestly do think has been better. Like, sure, there has been lapses and it wasn't going to be fixed overnight, but I think there are certainly improvements from what we saw last year. So, yeah, to answer the question, though, I think it would rely more on what Pritchard does than Simons.
Yeah, I would agree, because this is probably where the Gonzalez conversation comes in, right? Like, if Pritchard's defense and his scoring is there, then you would say, all right, let's lean into Gonzalez to get more defense in there. But if Pritchard's scoring isn't there and just his defense is there, then you say, okay, at what point do you bring in Simons and possibly Gonzalez for the defense? So not a bad thing moving forward, because at least you have a solution for a multi-prong issue when they come. But what are they going to do about the size? Is there any conversation at looking at some of these free agents that are sitting out there to bring in on kind of just a kind of look-see deal, even a two-way or a 10-day? Is there any idea of what they're going to do about the size? Because you can't grow. You can't make a 6'2" guy a 6'10" guy.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, no, I think this is the team they got for right now, at least going into the trade deadline. I think they're going to carry that open roster spot for the time being. And, you know, they'll address the team like they always do throughout the year. But I'd imagine that come the deadline, that's when you have that conversation. And I think that's when the luxury tax thing becomes interesting, right, depending on how this team's playing, because you have the opportunity to get under the first apron and the luxury tax line by trading Anthony Simons at the deadline. And I think that's kind of going to be an interesting thing to watch. It would save the ownership $40 million, and that would tell you a lot about what this ownership's going to look like. You know, are they going to, you know, try to get under the taxes and try to save money? And maybe it does make sense to do it this year, or are they going to try to build a contender? Like, I think if Anthony Simons, if they do not view him as part of their long-term equation, which they could, they very well could, they can extend him this summer if they like what they see. But if they don't view him as a long-term piece to this team, then I can see them flipping him and bringing in somebody for size. But it's going to be a relatively cheap player, right? Because if you're going to trade him, I would imagine it's to get under the luxury tax and to get under the first apron. Like, no matter what, it's not going to be a big fish, because they're not going to go back into the second apron until the summer. So
I don't need a big fish. I just need a big fish.
A big.
I just need a big.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is what they're going to go with for now. And, you know, the rebounding is going to be an issue all year, and it's going to be frustrating because people are going to talk about it all year, and it's going to lose them games. But there's just the personnel is the personnel, and I think this is what they're going to stick with for now.
So, Terp, Jaylen Brown is a supermax player, a finals MVP. He's a great part of the city, and he is a great player. He's a fringe all-NBA guy. And when you look at his first two games, like Philly, he scores 25 points, shoots 50%, only has 4 assists, but there was the 16 potential assists. Guys just missed a bunch of shots. But then against the Knicks, it's 23 points, but he had 7 turnovers in that game, only 3 assists. There was some real quiet moments, 5 fouls as well. I mean, not to state the obvious, but like, they need more consistency on both ends of the floor from Jaylen Brown. I mean, do you have any concerns about that? Because like you said earlier, Tatum only missed 10 games last year. And I think we even saw in the playoffs last year, game 5, Jaylen Brown was terrific against the Knicks. Then game 6, he wasn't that good and no one was really that good and they lost. I mean, should there be any, because this is if you're going to be a supermax guy, one of the things that should come with it is consistency. But I don't think we've seen enough of that going back to last year and obviously the two games this year. Are you worried about that at all? Or am I kind of overrating that?
No, I think that's a totally valid question and a totally valid concern. I mean, you can't have 7 turnovers. That's the reality of it. This is a team that is in no position to be giving away possessions, especially with how bad they are at rebounding the basketball. Like, they cannot be doing that. And Jaylen Brown has been at the head of that snake. So, yeah, no, that's totally a fair question. It's how can he, you know, people have been talking about it, right? Can Jaylen Brown be the number one? Can he kind of rise to that level? And I think he is capable. He's shown it, bits and pieces of it, but it's more so, can he do it consistently, right? Because we've seen him do it. You mentioned it last year in game 5 back at the Garden. Like, he was terrific. Even in game 2 against Orlando, he was awesome in that in the playoffs when Jason Tatum went down with the wrist injury.
Another good one.
So you've seen bits and pieces of it, but can he do it consistently? I think that's where the concern lies, because I think he can do it. It's just a matter of doing it night in and night out, which he's going to have to do at least for the foreseeable future.
All right, Terp. All right. I've kind of joked here, like, maybe the Utah game is when we might have a feel good Celtics feeling in a game. Do you think they can get through this size gauntlet? Look, Detroit's size. Cleveland's got size. You've got some pretty big teams. You see 76ers again, and they didn't use their size to win. Is it going to be one of those seasons where it's like, wow, I didn't think it would be that bad?
I still really haven't budged on what this team can be. I mean, honestly, like when I was looking at the schedule to begin the season, like that you knew the first seven were going to be a gauntlet. Like you knew it was going to be difficult and you knew they were going to drop games that maybe they shouldn't have, right? That's just part of the learning curve that this team has. Again, they have so many new faces, learning a new style, asking guys to do more things than they're used to. There's just a natural learning curve with that. But I still think this team can be competitive, and I think they're only going to get better. Like, they got better from Philly to New York. I know they lost by more points, but they won three of those four quarters. You can't get outscored by, 42 to 14 in the second quarter. Like, that just
you
can't
give up 21 offensive rebounds, you're going to lose the game. You're going to lose the game.
You were asking earlier, too, about the last time that the team gave up 20, right? That's only the second time that it's happened in the Joe Mazzulla era, so through three seasons here.
Yeah, I didn't think it was normal.
Three full seasons, yeah. No, it's definitely not normal. And, you know, it's probably my guess is that they're going to have quite a few of those games this year. But, yeah, no, I think there are still winnable games in this little gauntlet here. Obviously, you know, I think they win one of the back-to-back in Detroit or New Orleans. Like, Cleveland's really tough coming back home on Wednesday. They hung tight against Philly as well. I mean, Edgecombe and Maxey went for 70, and Philly had a big fourth quarter. Other than that, like, Boston was in control for most of that game, so I think that's winnable. And Houston's 0-2, but they are supersized. They are a supersized team, so they're going to have trouble with that. But then you got Utah and Washington, so it lightens up a little bit after. But I don't know. I'm still not necessarily budging on where this team can be because I truly don't think they're that far off. And I know it sounds crazy watching these last two games, but they've had flashes where they can dominate a game. Like I mentioned earlier, they've won five of the eight quarters that they've played. It's just when they've been bad, they've been so, so bad. And I wrote it in my article last night. It's like, yeah, you only get credit for winning the war. You don't get credit for winning the battles that are the quarters. But I think there are some silver linings in winning those battles. And the Celtics are seeing some of that. So I'm still kind of where I was at the beginning of the season with this team, where they're going to be scrappy. They're going to be around 500. They're going to be competitive. So they're going to get there eventually. They're only going to get better, and I think we saw that from game one to game two already.
All right, he is Justin Turpin of WEEI.com. Does a great job there. Turp, I feel like we could have you on for a whole hour talking about this stuff. But Turp, have a great rest of the day. And before you go, can you give us quickly, can you give us an actual date they get their first win? I know you've kind of talked around it. Is it going to be tomorrow, or are we going to have to wait longer than that?
Yeah, let's go with tomorrow. I think tomorrow's the day.
All right, let's go with tomorrow.
You're going to be motivated. You're ready to go.
Let's go with tomorrow. Turp books it down. Turp, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
All right, guys, anytime.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, KJ and Lyons, WEEI. John, are you familiar with Rush? You know they're going on tour.
No idea.
So how you might know any members of Rush is Geddy Lee, the lead singer, bassist, is the one who made the largest donation to the Negro Leagues, all the signed baseballs that helped kind of really push the Negro Leagues in Kansas City to like a new level. I think he just stopped through there maybe a couple weeks ago and just kind of had to like, you know, stop by the Negro Leagues and meet Geddy Lee. And I think he mentioned, yeah, Rush is going on tour. And then the word got out that Rush was going to go back on tour. Now, I will say this. You're a super nerd if you're like into Russian, like buy tour the snow dog. But I have Canadian relatives. You've heard me mention this, right?
So, I don't think so.
Yeah. I have Canadian relatives. Let's see. What is it? Hamilton, Ontario. I have some just on the other side of, was it Woodstock? On the other side of Woodstock, right on the other, in Woodstock, Nova Scotia. Some are there. So, yeah. So, Rush is a little bit in my blood, eh? So, yeah. Rush is, if you've ever played a band? You ever played an instrument?
No.
You said it like no. Like you have the brain power to do it, right?
I wouldn't be good at it.
So. I'm not asking you. Do you know how to dance? That's a little more personal. But I used to play bass guitar, and we were pretty good. Jersey Shore, you get into these real heavy competitions. People see you. They're like, "Hey, you got something to go." So for us, it was like Tico Torres happened to see us at like a Battle of the Bands show. The drummer for Bon Jovi. He's like, "You guys got something? Stick to it." Then the guitarist, his family is super wealthy, and he just went off to boarding school, the Blair Academy. Like, yeah, you're not going to do this rock and roll thing. Killed my dreams. I could have been the next. I could have been the Black Geddy Lee. I could have been General Lee. Now, maybe that's the name I probably shouldn't have taken if I became the bassist.
It might have,
you know,
created a weird
thrown
conflict.
Some people off.
Yeah.
I'm more like a Bootsy Collins. Hallelujah. So let's get to these final text messages before we get out of here. Remember, BC Louisville, -26.5. Tonight at 7 here on WEEI. Jason, what you got?
617 texter saying Jaylen Brown is way overrated, too many turnovers, dribbles in slow motion, and is not a good outside shooter.
So, John, let me not dismiss the texter, what they're saying. I think Jaylen Brown's a little more talented than that. But if he wants to play the mid-range game, does he really have big bodies to put out screens? How's he going to play mid-range game with no big guy out there?
Right, and it's tough. Look, in fairness, right, when Jason Tatum's the one, Jaylen Brown is his two.
Right.
When Jaylen Brown is the one, the two is Derek White, who's still an all-star caliber player, but there's a drop-off there, right?
Right.
But this year, I mean, look, Jaylen Brown came into the league, and he had 1 year without Tatum. Ever since then, Tatum has been the guy. Like, it was Kyrie, I guess, for, you know, a year and a half, whatever. But it's essentially been Tatum. So this is his first real opportunity to be one.
Even when Haywood came, he'd been moved to the sixth man role. Remember that?
Right. And then, if you remember, Gordon Hayward broke his leg, the starting five, Jaylen Brown was the two guard. So he was in that starting lineup. And then, of course, things shifted around after the injury, all that. But, like, this is his first real chance to be the one because the only other time that Tatum has been on the team was when Brown was a rookie.
Yeah.
And how is he going to feel his way into that role? I mentioned it earlier in the show. One thing a lot of these guys aren't used to, Brown included, is losing, right? Pritchard's not used to it. Derek White's not used to it. Brown's not used to it. Hauser's not used to it. So they start 0-2.
I think it's even worse than that, John. It's not even so much that they're – because you're going to lose some games.
I want to say.
I don't think they've looked this underwhelming in a long time.
The last time I can think of is, remember 2021 when they lost to the Nets in five games in the first round? But if you remember, Jaylen Brown had like a broken wrist and didn't play in that series. So it was just Tatum else.
Yeah, that would be the time where they were trying to figure out, do they like Brad? What was Brad's future? He really wasn't connecting with them. So that might have been
Danny Ainge quit right after that, right?
Yeah. So that's that one time where there was an uncertainty, but still the talent on the court showed itself. I'm saying now, like, Brown can have 23 points and it mean absolutely nothing. Like, when I watched the Celtics, especially last night, I said, man, it's going to be very hard for this team to get 80 points every night. It really is.
I think the other thing is, one thing that Tatum and Brown have worked so well together as is, a lot of times Brown is the guy who comes out and attacks in the first quarter, early second quarter, and Tatum kind of feels the game out. And at the end of the game, they both might have 30 points, but they kind of, or 25 points, but they gut it kind of in different ways.
They're forcing teams to deal with two high levels going on the court at the same time.
Exactly. Now, though, you need Brown to attack early, but you're also going to need him to attack in the middle of the game.
I mean, even the rebound.
Right. So it's just, think about it, right? How would the Denver Nuggets be if Jokic had to miss a year and Jamal Murray was the one? Like, they'd still be okay.
They would go get Mason Plumlee to take a spot.
But they'd still be, and of course they have Aaron Gordon, who just dropped 150 the other night. But it's when you have that one gone, now instead of being, hey, I can attack and I can be this guy in these moments, now you got to do it for 48 minutes. Be the one. And not only be the one for 48 minutes, but even when Tatum is the one for 48 minutes, he's got a finals MVP as the two. Brown, and all due respect to Derek White,
and when the double coverage comes to him, Brown is available for the he can hit the open shot from three, as you saw in the Indiana series, where he hits the court like the hardest possible shot you could hit is a in your face inbound three with with a buzzer about to go off in your face. So
when Tatum's the one, it's Brown who's the two and White who's the three. Now with Brown as the one, White gets elevated to the two, and there's a little bit of a gap there. But I think there's also a bigger gap. Now instead of White being the three, and of course on some nights it was Porzingis, now Pritchard's the three.
And yeah, that feels like when Don Cornelius left Soul Train, right? Just trying it out. You don't remember Soul Train.
No idea what you're talking about.
Wow. Don't ever say that out loud again. One more text real quick, Jason, then we're out of here.
All right, back to the Bruins. We got a 207 texter saying Cam Neely and Don Sweeney should be straight up embarrassed that they spent so much money and this is the 2025 Bruins team. I mean, really?
Yeah, John, one answer for me. They did win today, but I think they're buying more time for themselves. Bad team out there, buy Sweeney and Neely more time. Joe Sacrificial Lamb, gone. Strum, the new guy, we'll get him acclimated. It buys Sweeney and Neely.
You got to fire six coaches before the GM can be looked at, I guess, if you're the Bruins.
That's how it works. Jason Ward, thank you so much for amazing work on the board and for all the buttons you had to push that moved so fast with KJ and Lyons. Missed any of the show? The Odyssey app is free. Remember, type WEEI and you can listen to it backwards and forwards. BC, Louisville, 7 p.m. here on WEEI. Have a great Saturday. See ya!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.